Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm joined as ever by my partner from Sky Sports, Jeff Reinbold. And we are doubling down on the coffee this morning because Jeff just bought us a cup of coffee on the way here to the studios. Then we arrived at the studios and our wonderful technician, Chris, has got the good coffee out. So now I'm torn between Jeff's coffee, which is very nice too, Jeff, or Chris's coffee, which is actually better.
Hey, mine's 2 pounds a cup, and that's hand-pressed right there, baby, so you better go with Chris's.
All right, we are going to look at both championship games from last night. The New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks have advanced to Super Bowl 49, and we will take your questions in the mailbag. But we're going to start with a very special guest today on Inside the Huddle. We are very privileged to have this gentleman join us just hours after the demolition of the Indianapolis Colts, a guy that we know very well. Jeff Reinbold coached him for a number of years. We'll welcome Sebastian Vollmer of the New England Patriots to Inside the Huddle. Sebastian, thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem at all. Hope you guys are doing well.
What's the process then after you finish that game? Do you get some downtime or is it just purely rest and relaxation?
So we finished pretty late last night. Just went out to eat and did a little gathering with family and friends, and then, you know, after this, I'm going back to the stadium, looking at game film, and kind of starting this whole thing over again, trying to get ready for Seattle.
We're on to Seattle, as Coach said.
Wie geht es, mein Spieler? Was ist los mit dir, der große Spieler? How about that, man? You didn't think I could still do that, did you?
No, I don't think you ever could, actually.
Sebastian, tell us your story. From Jeff was coaching you in Team Europe, and you know, your journey from Dusseldorf in Germany to where you are now with the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I played club team football in Germany in Dusseldorf, and I was selected into the Team Europe where Coach Reinbold was office coordinator, and he really kind of took me under his wing and you know, tried to get me to go to college, and was probably a little hesitant at the time, but you know, he really was a big influence in my development as a young player. And I ended up, after that game in San Diego, I played another year for that club team and ended up going to the University of Houston. He actually visited me there a couple of times, so it was great as well. And then, obviously, was lucky enough to get drafted by the New England Patriots 6 years ago.
Now, you are so humble and so amazing. But you know what? You may not remember this, Sebastian, but we were in Spain in a training camp environment for Team Europe. And one of the journalists that was covering that training camp was Neil.
And I was there.
He remembers the story of when I asked you to stand up in front of your teammates. And I said, if you want to play in the NFL, this is what you got to look like. And he still talks about that. But that journey was such an amazing story of belief and perseverance and talent and toughness. And just, I remember when I came to Houston to visit you, I think it was your first year at UH, and I went up and saw Coach Briles, and we talked about you, and he said, hey, he's a great kid. Everybody loves him. We just don't know what he's going to be. They had fooled around trying to make you a tight end, fooled around trying to make you a defensive lineman. And finally, they let you grow into being a tackle. And I remember the next time I saw you, I think, was we were playing you guys, and you just were absolutely a dominant player at left tackle for the Houston Cougars. And again, now watching you, I've watched now 2 straight weeks, 8 quarters of football, haven't given up a sack against some really, really good pass rushers. So you've become one of the better right tackles in the National Football League.
I appreciate it, Coach. I do remember the Spain training game and stuff, so probably a little skinnier than I am now, but it's a good time.
Yeah.
What's it like, Sebastian, then, now when, I guess you're in the moment, so you don't reflect on the magnitude or your place in history, but you are blocking for one of the all-time great quarterbacks in Tom Brady. What's that like on when you go out every Sunday, and what's he like to be around?
I've been lucky enough that he's the only quarterback I had to block for. So I don't know any different, but you know, is an amazing guy to play with. He's so intense in his preparation, and, you know, he's really the leader of the offense and for the team, really. And, you know, I mean, you take, well, I do at least, and I know the other guys blocking up front, you take a lot of pride into, you know, giving the guy time because, I mean, obviously he knows coverages, he knows the blitzes, he knows so much where you give him time that he can probably make something happen. So we take a lot of pride into that, I would say. And, yeah, he's a great guy to be around.
Now, Sebastian, you know, you played in the league 6 years and all of it with the Patriots and all of it for Bill Belichick. But I know particularly offensive linemen, you know, it's like a little union you guys have throughout the league and everybody talks with one another and you compare notes about things. Give us a little peek behind the curtain with the New England Patriots. What is it that separates Belichick as a coach from any of the other coaches that you've had experience with?
I would say it's a lot of preparation. I mean, again, it's the only team I've been with in the league, so it's hard for me to judge. But I would say, you know, he doesn't leave a stone unturned. Whatever could happen, I feel like we're prepared for. We practice very hard, which I'm sure most teams do as well. But I would say just his football mind and, you know, things he comes up with from, you know, play calls over, you know, when to practice, how to practice, what to do, you know, just like his overall approach of how can you get better on Sunday. So it might take into consideration, you know, what to eat, when to eat, or, you know, all that stuff. You know,
everything, huh? Now, you guys start out 2-2, and as crazy as this sounds, people are saying, you know, the game's passed Belichick by. Brady needs, you need to think about, you know, who's going to be the quarterback now. Has he got any game left in him? And now you guys are getting ready for the Super Bowl. What has caused that turnaround in your season? What do you attribute that to?
Well, I don't think our mindset has changed. You know, I think we are a better team than we were in September. But I don't think we, as a team and the people in that building, doubted ourselves. I mean, we knew we were good. I knew we were going to get better. So we kind of kept on, really. I mean, we practiced the same. We kind of did stuff the same. We just, you know, sometimes you got to put your head down and keep on going. And let's say that's what we did. And, you know, obviously it wasn't the greatest start, wasn't the best. You know, like I said, 2-2 start you wanted to have. And, you know, reports are coming out and doubting every player and coaches and stuff. And just try not to listen to it and keep on going, really. And, you know, luckily we've made it to the big game and, you know, hopefully can win it too.
Sebastian, tell us about last night when you guys got on this roll against the Indianapolis Colts. You know, the confidence you must have been feeling there. So a two-part question, you know, how good did you guys feel as you were getting into your rhythm in that game? And also the second part of my question, how did Nate Solder get ahead of you in the queue for the tackle eligible play?
Well, I'll answer that one first.
Because they were going to make you a tight end, so why didn't you get it?
Well, so we'll see. I guess he's a better athlete.
Okay, fair enough.
But no, whenever that happens, it's amazing.
What about the performance of the team?
It's great. I didn't think it's going to be the score was going to be like that. You know, you don't want to assume things. And obviously the Colts were the other team left in the AFC. And, you know, it was a little closer going into halftime. But, you know, at the end, I guess you kind of feel, you know, that you got a chance here. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like just looking at our team, if we do what we're supposed to do, if we execute well, if we play to the standards that we have set, I think we're hard to beat. But, you know, obviously it doesn't work all the time. So I haven't watched the game film or the coach's film yet, but, you know, I guess most things really worked, but there are things we have to do better as well.
Now, have they talked to you at all, Sebastian, about what your plan is for the Super Bowl, about when you're going to leave, how you're going to – all of the things that go into – you've had an opportunity to be in one other one. So all the things that go into getting a team prepared to play – are you going to spend the bulk of your time getting your game plan in this week before you go to Phoenix, or how exactly do you guys handle it?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. We're going to have a meeting today, and I'm assuming coach is going to tell us about it then. Well, since you do have an opponent, I guess you can start working on it. But exactly how they're going to do it, I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
Sebastian, just as we wrap up here on Inside the Huddle, we have three games being played in the UK in 2015. I know you Patriots have been over previously and been involved in those games. How much would you like to see that expanded? Would you like to see more games in the UK, or would you do you think that Germany is ready to host one of those regular season games?
Well, one, when we went, I loved it. I mean, it was a great experience. I thought London was a great town. I mean, I think the whole team loved it. You know, luckily we won, so that helps. But, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, it was awesome. From team bonding over, you know, playing at a great stadium to the people. I mean, I think it sold out within, you know, I don't know, minutes or something. So that was great. And then the Germany part, I do think that would be ready. I mean, I feel like just looking back at you know, my childhood, the NFL Europe that was there. I mean, there were a bunch of cities that, you know, had a pretty good turnout on, you know, regular season games. So I would think that would work, but I mean, obviously I'm not a businessman, so I'm not sure exactly how that, how that turns out. But, you know, I would love to see that. And I definitely love those experiences.
So he's not a businessman, but he's a smart man. Do you see that answer there? There's a smart man right there.
Exactly. Hey, Big Skinny, I got to ask you a question. Now, are you going to bring your parents over? Are they going to come over for the Super Bowl?
I haven't talked to them yet, but I assume so. They came last year, so I mean, last time we went, so I assume they come.
You know what? I get a smile on my face every time I think about you and me and Sebastian Brouwer sitting down with your mom and dad. And we start talking about the opportunity that may be out there for you. And I think your mother looked at me like I was either completely out of my mind or I was speaking Chinese, because she couldn't figure out how anybody was going to pay for her son to go play that silly game and get paid for it. So congratulations on an amazing journey, man.
I appreciate it. And I don't think I've, I don't know if I ever told you, but I definitely appreciate what you did for me. And, you know, you wouldn't. Big part of where I am today, and you know, I haven't forgotten. I definitely appreciate that.
Well, I know that I appreciate that very much too, and we look forward to seeing you at the press conferences. Neil and I and I want to pull you aside for another one-on-one.
Very nice. Are y'all going to wear some costumes and stuff?
No, we don't. No, listen,
Neil's the guy that dresses like
Sebastian. Somebody said last year that Media Day is a playground for the foolish, and I agree. I hate Media Day. So I'll get you some other day.
all right, fair enough.
But listen, the skinny kid who stood up at the back of the room in Barcelona has made good. Sebastian, we congratulate you for reaching Super Bowl 49, and we'll speak to you in Arizona.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Awesome, Seabass. Take care, brother.
Thanks, man.
All right. You too.
That's Sebastian Vollmer. Great story. It's a great story, isn't it, Jeff? When you think about where you first spotted him, you know, you said, I think that kid could play football. Where was it? Where did you first see him?
Actually, you know what? He was a swimmer, and he had gone to see his friend who was playing for the Dusseldorf Panthers practice. And he looked at football and he went, I think I could do this. I think I'd like this. Mm. And what made him so amazing was at 6'6", about 205 pounds at that time, as skinny as he was physically nasty. I mean, he enjoyed the physical part of the game. And most big kids, you know, that usually takes them some time before they fit into it. But you remember going to that training camp in Barcelona, and when I did ask him to stand up, how shy he was.
Yeah, you know.
He really didn't. He looked at the ground. He shuffled his feet. He really didn't feel comfortable being in that spotlight. But
he looked like a proper – when I remember when he stood up and he looked like a football player. Yeah. Even then, he was, what, 17, 18 years old.
Yeah, and then we went over to San Diego and played in that game, and he's blocking those American kids. And you know, about halfway through the first quarter, you could see the light come on in him that he knew, hey, it doesn't matter. I can play this game.
I can play this level. And these kids are going on to college, and I can do it. Yeah. Yep. All right, that was Sebastian Vollmer of the New England Patriots. Let's move on to look back at the – championship games then, Jeff, and we will start with the NFC championship game, the first of the two we had on Sky Sports last night. It ended up Seattle winning 28-22 in overtime against the Green Bay Packers. And Jeff, I just want to preface this by saying that I'm not a Packers fan. I like Aaron Rodgers, but I also like Russell Wilson, and I think Russell Wilson is a tremendous role model for a lot of people around the NFL and could be looked up to. I think he deserves to be in a second Super Bowl. But I watched the end of this game and it just made me angry, because I see a team that is so close to going to the Super Bowl completely self-destruct. And, you know, credit Seattle for fighting back. You have to credit the way they hung in there and they believed they could get back in it. But, you know, just looking at some of the quotes from Aaron Rodgers, he said afterwards, "We gave it away. We've got nobody to blame but ourselves. This, we were the better team today. This is a missed opportunity I will think about for the rest of my career." I mean, we could be here all day if we list the ways in which the stage looked too big for the Packers, well, early on in the red zone, but then especially in the second half. I mean, it was one boneheaded thing going against them after another, and it was players, it was coaches, it was schemes, it was formations. I mean, it was... They had this game, didn't they? They had this game.
You know, it's incredible. When we did the telestrations piece before the game, and you and I stood up there and we talked about, there's no way that a Packer team can play this poorly. Mm. Again, week one, just how bad they were. 18 missed tackles, which you pointed out. All the challenges with getting lined up, doing everything that it takes to win a football game. And then at the critical moments, and that's the key thing, at the critical moments.
Which is what big games come down to, doesn't it?
That's how champions are crowned, and that's how they win championships, because they perform at the most critical moments. Mm. And at the most critical moments, when the Packers had the game in their grasp, they let it slip away. And I would venture to say that Aaron Rodgers will haunt him way past when his career ends. I think this will be one of those ones that he'll carry with him for the rest of his life. And I think everybody that's, you know, a part of that Packer organization, from Teddy Thompson all the way through the guys that clean the, you know, that clean out Lambeau Field, and the fans are going to say, this was an opportunity lost.
Lost, yeah, to go on the road and win in Seattle. Let's look at a couple of the missed opportunities. Then we will talk about Seattle. So we're not just going to focus on the negatives, but they are the story. And then we'll get to Seattle and how they drag themselves back into it with, 15 points in 44 seconds late in the game. But early on, a couple of field goals. Mason Crosby, 18 yards, 19 yards. Mm-hmm. These are points you're leaving out on the field, aren't they? Either through red zone inefficiency or the first one, you felt they should have definitely gone for it on fourth down.
Well, here's the thing, Neil. When you play on the road, you know, if you're playing at home, you can play conservative ball, right? But when you play on the road, you have to strike for the juggler. You have to go for the big hit. Mm. And they have the ball 6 inches away from a touchdown, right? 6 inches away from a touchdown, and they decide to kick a field goal. Yeah. I didn't agree with the call at the time. We talked about it on the television, and I still don't agree with the call. I think, to me, that's playing too conservatively. You have to send a message to your football team, even if you don't get it. It's the first quarter, and they're going to start their drive from the inch line, and you got a chance to hold them down there, get the ball at midfield, and drive it again and score. So it didn't make sense to me. The second one was I could understand the second one a little more, but still, I didn't feel like they were aggressive in their approach, which they needed to be. And then, you know, that ended up hurting them in a number of ways over the course of the game.
Let's fast forward to the third quarter. Packers had extended their lead to 16-0. They have Seattle facing us, and Russell Wilson struggled at this point. Marshawn Lynch is not on track. Second and 30. People don't get out of second and 30, right? So then Marshawn Lynch has an 11-yard run. Okay, it's third and 19. Third and 19, you get off the field, what, 99.9% of the time? Or you get, it's got to be in the 90s, the percentage. I don't have the stats, but it's got to be. Third and 19, you get off the field and you rush. What was it? Was it three? Was it two? It didn't even look like three.
It was two with a spy. So they had the two ends rushing up the field and the nose tackle on a spy. So, okay, let's evaluate the play from a football coaching standpoint. Mm. First of all, you've got a spy who is 330 pounds on Russell Wilson.
He's not
spying anything. He's just taking up space, right? So now you have two guys committed to the rush, and they try to play saturation zone coverage, three deep, five under three deep coverage. And what happened was, as Russell Wilson moved around, the Packer under coverage didn't continue to sink for depth, and eventually, you know, a receiver worked his way into a space, and Russell Wilson found him because he had no pressure on him. And again, I think if you ask Dom Capers to go back and reevaluate his calls, that's a call he's certainly going to want back. Because, listen, let's face it, Seattle is not a great throwing football team, especially in that situation, you know, third and 16.
Third and 19.
So
why
would you, again, give him an opportunity to continue to move around and let somebody work free as opposed to either rush four or five and zone him off and keep the ball in front of you, tackle it, and get off the field? I just, again, I know you went absolutely bonkers in the studio on that one, and rightly so. Yeah. I think you had a valid point.
Then they make the stop. They get off the field, and Seattle score on the fake field goal.
Yeah. Credit Pete on this one, because the best time
there's to playing to win.
Yeah. And again,
we've got nothing to lose at this stage.
Everything said, it's 16-0. Everything said there, kick your three, get it to a two-touchdown game, and you got a chance in the third quarter. He didn't do that. He defied logic, and that's the best time to run a fake is when teams would least expect it.
Yep.
And again, what happened on the play, we diagrammed it for you on the Telestrator. There was a player who didn't do his job, right? And you hear Belichick say this all the time, and it's just like a coaching mantra. Do your job. The corner on the rush side didn't get to the depth of the tee. A.J. Hawk then got put in a bad situation where he either could cover the tight end and let Ryan run for the first down, which is probably what he should have done because Ryan's a poor athlete. He chases, he goes to tackle Ryan, has the ball thrown over his head, and they get a touchdown to an offensive lineman. Just one of those plays where you just shake your head and go, that I cannot really believe in a championship game in the National Football League. I just watched that play.
Green Bay did stretch their lead to 19-7 in the fourth quarter. A Mason Crosby field goal, 48 yards. Then with 5 minutes and 5 minutes and 4 seconds left, Russell Wilson throws over the middle. It's intercepted by Morgan Burnett. And I actually said, oh my goodness, the Packers are going to the Super Bowl. It was, and Morgan Burnett intercepted that football at his own 39-yard line. He ran it 4 yards to his own 43. And Jeffy threw himself down on the floor. And I haven't seen very much said or written about this, but for me it was a big deal because I can't wait to see the coach's film. We didn't get a great look at it, but when I saw it on the TV pictures, I saw a lot of green space around him. I saw only offensive linemen bearing down on him. He's a safety. He could outrun some of those offensive linemen. You might be able to flip the field, and at the very least you kick a field goal there. To me, that was, well, I'm scared that I might fumble this ball as I'm running it back. That was playing not to lose right there. And I thought it was a big play, even though it didn't get a lot of attention.
I think that's a great call. And it has, because there have been so many plays that were, you know, needed discussion. That's one that you look at it, and basically the ball got put at midfield anyway. Mm. But he had another 15 or 20 yards. That's two first downs that the offense doesn't need to get. And you're down there kicking another field goal, and now the game is what? Now the game is
22-7. That
22-7, right? So, again, what do you force them into now? Two touchdowns and a two-point conversion to tie you. So that is, again, another example of how the Packers played not to lose as opposed to played to win. And, again, that one is just one of many plays in this game, and I think the one that I keep going to was after the touchdown, and Seattle has to go for two.
Oh, yes. This is after Brandon Bostic's messed up the onside kick.
Yeah, I mean, all of the other things have happened,
Then they score the touchdowns, and then they try and go for two to give themselves a three-point lead.
And wasn't it interesting, after Bostic screws up the onside kick where he's supposed to be blocking and he doesn't block his guy, he tries to make a play, does Jordy Nelson's job for him and drops the ball, they lose possession. Well, you could tell when Green Bay came on the field, they were absolutely shell-shocked.
Yep.
And they went down. Seattle went through them in like four plays and got it in the end zone. So now Seattle's up by one, and Pete makes the decision to go for two. Now, two things happened on this play that I thought were really incredible. Number one, Wilson had the wits about him as he's being pressured to just throw the thing up across the goal line.
Which is an absolute no-no, 90% of the time. You don't throw back across the field.
Never throw back across the field late, but he knew, he's smart enough to understand the situation. Situational football, if it's picked off in the end zone, it's no harm to me, right? It's the end of the play. You can't run it. It's not college football. You can't run it back for a two-point conversion. Mm. So he wanted to keep the ball alive, so he just heaves it up in the air across the field, and
HaHa Clinton Dix is watching the ball come down and just absolutely is paralyzed with fear to make an interference call or whatever.
He kept Luke Wilson in front of him as well, Jeff, as if he was going to say, if you catch this, you're not getting past me. But he didn't need to get past
you.
He was in the end zone.
Yeah, exactly. And the number one fundamental of pass defense in the end zone is be between the man and the ball, right? Yeah. And so he just freezes, and bingo, they get a two-point conversion. Now Rodgers has to drive the field to kick a field goal to put it in overtime. Had Dix made that play, knocked that ball down, which it easily should have been knocked down, that field goal would have been to win the game. So, again, so many ways the Packers just really folded underneath the pressure.
Just before we move on to Seattle and talk about how they didn't fold down the stretch, you didn't like the defensive formation on the winning touchdown. You talked about this in the Sky Sports studios. It put too much pressure on those corners?
Well, you know, here's the thing. And again, I'm just going to – there obviously were communication breakdowns, right? Because Dom Capers has coached an awful long time.
Yes.
And he's a very good football coach, one of the best defensive minds that have been in the NFL for probably the last 30 years.
Yep.
One of the fundamentals of defense is the front and the back end have to be coordinated together. So what I'm saying to you is if you're rushing four, then you're either playing zone or you're playing free safety man defense with a rat or a robber. Well, if you bring what's called a plus blitz, where you have one more rusher than they have blockers, then you play zero coverage, which is everybody's locked up. There's nobody in the middle of the field.
No safety help.
No safety help. And they know that they have to be inside of all routes, right? Well, what I saw on the play was the back end, the secondary, is playing man-to-man. The front end is rushing four. The linebackers are in no man's land, and there's no middle safety.
Mm.
So somewhere there was a huge communication breakdown on that play. And it cost him because Tremont Williams is playing man-to-man outside thinking he's got safety help, and there is no safety help. So whether it was the safety, whether it was the linebackers, whether it was the call, whether it was Dom, I don't know where the breakdown occurred, but I do know this. You cannot do that because the quarterback has no pressure. He knows the middle of the field's open, and Wilson did exactly what a great quarterback does when he sees the middle of the field open. He throws the ball out there and lets his guy go get it.
Seattle did show tremendous mental strength to come back and score these touchdowns and then go on and win it in overtime. And Russell Wilson to overcome what has to be the worst game of his career. You don't see four interceptions out of Russell Wilson. That just doesn't happen. So they overcome that. And Jeff, just to take people inside our studios, we have monitors in front of us. And I'm not sure whether this footage that I saw was on the main feed that everyone sees. We have a feed in front of us, which is what you see. It's us on the broadcast. What goes out to you guys, the listeners and the viewers, that's what we see in front of us. Then we have another monitor, which is constantly showing us things from the stadium. So it's all the feed that comes in from the US broadcaster. And there was a point after the Morgan Burnett interception, Jeff, where I saw two things. I saw Russell Wilson marching up and down the bench, clearly not mailing it in, and they're up against it. They're down by 12. Packers have the ball, and there's 5 minutes left. So, and I saw Marshawn Lynch kind of half dancing and half sort of prowling up and down the sidelines. And part of me thought he either doesn't give a stuff and he's got his Super Bowl ring and he doesn't care that they're about to lose this game, or that guy looks like he genuinely can't wait to get back out there because he thinks they've got a chance to win this game. That's incredible to have that when you're down by 12 without the football with 5 minutes left. I mean, this you have to credit whether it's all professional athletes or whether it was those Seahawks in particular. They didn't give up on that game in what I thought was game over at that stage.
Well, you know what? You get what you emphasize in coaching. You get what you emphasize. And if you watch Seattle practice, it's all about competition. It's all about competing through adversity. And what happens when that's what they get every day, that's the mantra, that's who we are, that's our identity, at those critical moments when you have to step up, you can step up because you've practiced it. And it's not a big deal to you. Where I think the Packers, and you look at it, and you just got to wonder, how in the world do you not compete when it's the brightest lights are on you? Mm. And Marshawn Lynch, I think Doug Baldwin, I think Kearse, I think all of those players in those blue uniforms just refused. I mean, they had – and I'm going to tell you something. When it was 16-0 on that monitor that you talk about, we saw a defensive huddle where there was a lot of angry going on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And everybody was after one another. But they just never quit. They never stopped believing. Now, hundreds of Seattle fans left early and had to watch
yes,
the thing.
Yes, I saw that.
You know, but the players never quit.
No.
And why? Because Pete never did. He
yeah.
never looked
he
like.
He wouldn't let them. Yeah.
No, he just willed that football team to keep competing. And that's, again, confirms with validity what they coach.
How will Seattle move on to the Super Bowl? And we'll talk about the Super Bowl in more depth as we get closer to the big game. What kind of confidence will they move on with, Jeff? Because you talked about it before. This is a team with an aura. This is a team with a swagger. This is a team now that can say to opponents, we can turn it over 5 times and we can actually still beat you.
Well, and that defies NFL logic, right?
Yeah.
That defies pro football logic. If you said you're going to have 5 turnovers in a game, are you going to win the game? You're not going to get very many people say you're going to win that football game. But I'll tell you what, this football team, it has, I'm sure, galvanized. If there were any doubters about what they do in that locker room, they can't doubt now because they've been there, done that. So next weekend or in 2 weeks when they play New England. New England jumps up to a big lead. You know, hey, they turn the
Don't
ball
panic.
Over. Don't
yeah.
panic because we've been here. We've done this. And again, I think that is what you get from these games, what the takeaway from these games is, you know. And on the other side, what's the takeaway for the Packers? You know, a lesson, hopefully a lesson, and that you got to understand when you have a chance to finish a team, you got to put your foot on their throat and stab them in the chest and finish it, you know?
I was thinking about the Packers going into the offseason because what a punch in the gut this is going to be. And they've got 7.5 months before they can even start to put this right. But I thought that the really good teams, Jeff, and they are a good team and they can do this. And this is where it's going to come to people like Aaron Rodgers. It's going to come to Mike McCarthy. We could be sitting here this time next year talking about how the Packers used the pain of this loss that they've just had, you know, to drive them in 2015, and they're heading to the Super Bowl. They're good enough. They showed they're clearly good enough. They punched their ticket to Arizona and then just didn't get on the plane. I mean, that's how close they were. But it is going to take some mental toughness and, you know, the right messages being delivered in their building, isn't it?
Absolutely. You are correct in everything you said. Now, when things happen like this, when things happen like this to you, you have two choices. You can go sit in the corner and suck your thumb and feel sorry for yourself, or you can evaluate it. You can evaluate it with no emotion. You can evaluate it with true eyes and say, first of all, if I'm, you know, again, if you're Mike McCarthy, the first place you go is me. All right.
Yep.
Evaluate my performance, what I did and didn't do well in those moments, and then everybody else throughout that roster, throughout that coaching staff, and all the support guys, where are we deficient in these moments? Mm. So when we get put in these moments, we perform better.
The great Marv Levy, I remember sitting and talking to him at the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and he told me the thing he liked about his Buffalo Bills teams the most, Jeff, they lost 4 Super Bowls in a row. He said they never lay down in the fetal position and cried. They got back up and they got on with it. I mean, that was the credit, and that's what the Packers have done.
Yeah, that's what the Packers have to do if you're competitors, and I truly believe they are.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? The guy I'm thinking about through that whole game is Teddy Thompson, because Teddy has done an unbelievable job of building that team.
Yeah.
I mean, and they have all the disadvantages that are inherent with, you know, the National Football League, the salary cap, roster sizes, roster fluctuations, older players leaving, when to make decisions on guys. And he's found ways to keep the Packers, you know, relevant and competitive and one of the winning franchises in the league. How do you think? Do you think it's not a punch in the gut for him to sit up in that press box and watch that unravel like that?
Yeah, absolutely. The Seattle Seahawks advanced to Super Bowl 49, 28-22 winners over the Green Bay Packers. New England Patriots, it was absolutely one-way traffic, 45-7 against the Indianapolis Colts. Patriots did it mostly on the ground. When you look at their 177 yards rushing, three touchdowns, they carried the football 40 times. Tom Brady threw it 35 times, 226 yards, three touchdowns. Most of that yardage coming in the second half. They put the slow death squeeze on them, didn't they, Jeff?
Well, I think this was really, this is New England football. I mean, this is Belichick. This is what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely well prepared. Take whatever you give them offensively. They're going to, if you give them the run, they're going to run it 40 times for 200 yards. The week before, they passed it 50 times. So they are a chameleon on offense. And again, whatever you give, they're going to take. Then defensively, they did an unbelievable job, their secondary, of taking those receivers away and forcing Luck, when he did complete balls, to complete balls to guys that they wanted to catch the football, not who Andrew Luck wanted to catch the football.
Yeah.
And then special teams, their return game was strong. That was a win in every single phase, all three phases of the game. Offense, defense, special teams, trump for the Patriots.
T.Y. Hilton had one catch for 36 yards. Hakeem Nicks had one catch for 15 yards. Andrew Luck went 12 of 33, 126 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. I had a couple of tweets today earlier, Jeff, which were saying that, you know, this shows that Andrew wasn't ready. You know, I'm going to argue with that because I'm the president of the International Andrew Luck Fan Club. But I don't think this was on Andrew Luck. I knew he threw a couple of interceptions late where he was trying to catch up. The guy had to sit in the rain for about 20 minutes every time while the Patriots slow marched down the field. He never had a chance again.
No, you can't put this one on him. I thought the kid played about as good as he could play under the situation. His receivers, I think what happens when you get to these high-level games, if you have a weakness, you're going to get exposed, right? Because the competition now is so much better. Everybody in the Patriots secondary can play. So when you look at that, and now you got a Hakeem Nicks, who, in my opinion, is a good receiver, not a great receiver in the league. T.Y. Hilton, who's just learning to be a great receiver in the league. And then, the fact of the matter is those tight ends couldn't get open, and it just really – they just choked the life out of you defensively. And, again, I don't think it was – it was certainly wasn't Andrew Luck, because he's not the guy that has to get open. He's the guy that got to get him the ball.
If the ball's pumped up.
Here you go.
LeGarrette Blount had 30 carries, 148 yards, three touchdowns. He was impressive, Jeff, in terms of, you know, the movement as well for a big man. He's got quick feet. He can skip to the outside if he needs to. They overpowered this Colts defense as they've done, you know, a number of times. And I'm just looking ahead to the Super Bowl, but there's no guarantee that they're going to come out and run the football like that because they may not even try to. We saw that against Baltimore. You just don't know what you're going to get with this team.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what you are going to get is they're going to be physical. And, you know, the Patriots have this image of being a finesse team on offense. Mm. They are a physical team offense. And they've got Devlin's a physical player. Ho'oMonoamonui's a physical player. Gronkowski's a physical player. The receivers will block. Edelman will go and stick his nose in there and block. The running backs. LeGarrette Blount showed what he was at Oregon last night. Great jump cut runner.
Yep.
You know. But when I looked at the tape, I looked at the tape again this morning in the NFL offices, and boy, oh boy, were the Colts fundamentally deficient on defense. Their tackling, their angles and tackling were really poor. You know, you got a guy like Blount who's a big cutback runner. He's not a speed runner. He's not going to outrun you. And time and time and time again, the Colts got cut back on because they, you know, again, we talk about near hip track tackling, right?
Yep.
Where you tackle the nearest hip to you and don't go across the bow the old school way.
They had improved their run defense the previous 2 weeks as well.
But again,
it's
that high level of competition when you got to do it at the, you know, at the critical moment, and they weren't able to do it. And watching, I was watching Greg Minuski, their defensive coordinator. Obviously, he was frustrated because as a defensive coordinator, I've been in that position where it doesn't matter what you call. You're just not tackling very well, and the other team is more physical than you, and that's a helpless situation.
Jeff, take us in the locker room after the game. The Indianapolis Colts have, you know, given up all those rushing yards, as I said, what was it, 177 yards and three touchdowns. They've seen the other team run the football on them 40 times. So you've taken a physical beating. We said this in the Sky coverage last night. You know, no matter what Manusky called, you could see the life being sucked out of his defense. They were being worn down. Jim Irsay, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, has come out and said, you know, we need to be a tougher team. Now, it's his team. It's his team. I totally get it. He signs the checks. You can say what you like. But I just wonder, you're physically hurting as a player, sitting in that locker room. Do you need to hear comments like that straight after you've just lost what for some is the biggest game of their career?
You know, obviously they had taken a physical pounding. They had taken, I mean, New England had imposed their will on them.
Yeah.
But it's the emotional pain that's worse after a game like that.
Yeah.
Because you know as a man and as a competitor that you've just been dominated physically. That
yeah.
is a horrible place to live. And then on top of it now, your owner, and again, here's the reality of it. There's a certain bond that exists in with those guys in the locker room. And when somebody from outside the locker room, even if he's the guy who's signing the paychecks, questions your toughness, your physical toughness,
yeah.
boy, that's not an easy one to swallow.
See, 'cause I don't think he's wrong in terms of what he's saying, in terms of, okay, you have a point. You have a point that maybe, you know, you've just seen the physicality of the New England Patriots. So to take it up to the next level, you need to be a tougher team. My point would be that could be addressed with Chuck Pagano. Normally, I'm all for people talking in the media because I think, you know, open forum, that's more for people like me to write about. But in this situation, I think that's something that he could have gone into Chuck Pagano's office on Monday morning, shut the door and said, right, now we're going to make some roster moves. We're going to do this. We are going to be a tougher team. I don't think it needed to be said in the public forum this time.
Well, yeah, like you say. You
I can't
know,
believe
the,
I said that.
At times, you know, you yeah, you talk about all the time about how what you do in the media is so important. And the same thing's true for owners, you know. And it's really a difficult thing for the coaches. I'm sure Pagano's dying because he's one game away from coaching in the ultimate game. And his football team is there and they're beaten up and they're physically beaten up and emotionally beaten up. And then again, to have the owner say we're not tough enough. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of things you can say about me that I can just let roll off my back. But if you tell me I'm not physically tough enough, that one's going to sit hard for me for a long time. So, you know, again, I think if Pagano, and I think he will, takes this in the right way and he can make it a rallying cry for their football team. And again, what you recognize is that those guys, those, and this sounds really, really, really tough, but here's the reality of it. Anybody outside that locker room, they really don't matter. It's the guys in the locker room. And that locker room is precious and sacred. And, you know, whatever's said outside the locker room has got to be just, you know, take it for what it is, take it for information, and then move on.
When you were saying, oh, I have a problem if you question my toughness, were you pretending to be one of the Colts, or are you telling me not to question your toughness?
No, I'm telling you.
I'm just checking.
I'm
just checking. Because, Jeff, you're tough, man. You're tough.
Now, I'm telling you, you want to get me going? That's a pretty good way to get me going right there. I mean, you know, because you take pride in your, you know, it's not a big macho thing, but it's about, hey, this game is played by tough guys for tough coaches who are demanding. There's not a single guy playing in the National Football League that isn't a tough guy. You can't play this game. You can't snap that chin strap on and not be a tough guy. Now, toughness is a relative term, too, but don't challenge my, you know, again, challenge my manhood. That's when you're going to get my attention real fast.
Shut up, Jeff, you wuss. Let's do the mailbag.
Hey, come over here.
Let's do the mailbag. And question here from Michael Stanners, who says, should Aaron Rodgers have targeted the injured Richard Sherman more, or was he still too much of a threat while hurt? So Sherman has injured his elbow. Actually, on other injury news, Earl Thomas dislocated his shoulder for the Seahawks. I mean, you thought you had an interesting point. We wondered at one point whether Sherman was putting it on, trying to bait him into throwing that way, and Rodgers was having none of it, was he?
Well, yeah, it was interesting because that's a Richard Sherman. He's that intelligent you wouldn't put something like that past him. But here again, let's talk about issues, right? If you're Green Bay and you've got a corner who has one arm, Well, we showed on the broadcast last night how the Packers a couple times had used a scheme where they brought receivers in to crack the linebackers and crack the strong safety and got Eddie Lacy to the corner to force Sherman to tackle.
Yes.
Now you got a one-armed corner who doesn't like to tackle to start with, and he's only got one arm, and you don't, don't forget about going after him on a pass. Make him tackle.
Yeah.
Again,
it's
not
thinking about
just,
things in the heat of battle, isn't it? Because
but
the intelligence.
That's your job.
Yeah. Well, look at, I mean, just a play that just popped into my mind as you were talking about football intelligence and knowing your job and knowing the circumstances. Late in that game, Eddie Lacy, we'd just seen Rodgers run for a first down, hobble, barely move. The following play, Eddie Lacy sort of snakes out of the backfield and then turns to block for Aaron Rodgers instead of turning his head around as Rodgers throws him the football. Eddie's got to know there, Aaron can barely move. He's got to get that ball into my hands. There's little small things, aren't they?
That's, again, there are so many things in the course of a game. And we say all the time, you got to understand how hard it is to win games in pro football because there's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of things, those little things that become gigantic things, because instead of Lacy turning around, catching that little check down route and gaining 6 or 8 yards, it's incomplete. And now here we go. It's second or third down again. And those are the detail things. Knowing that you've got a corner who's hurt and doesn't like to tackle to begin with and not going after him, those are the kinds of questions that I would have to ask. And that's probably good that I'm not, you know, in the mainstream media in the United States, because I look at this stuff and I go, hey, is anybody going to ask a relevant question
here? Yeah. This is a good question, really good question, I think, from Matthew Burns, who says, great coverage last night. So that always gets your question on Inside the Huddle. He says, how does Brandon Bostic try to get over last night's game? And I think this is interesting, Jeff, because we've talked about the job that Mike McCarthy's got to do. We've talked about Aaron Rodgers. But here's a young tight end who's not used to being in the spotlight. His Twitter blew up last night with abuse. He's going to deal with this on a personal level. So take us in. You know, does he reach out to veterans? Does he just go away and hide? You know, how would you try and help somebody like that through this situation?
Well, I think here's what will happen if the locker room's strong. The locker room will rally around one of their own, right? Because I think players, all players understand that they are, you know.
Well, they tell him it wasn't one play.
Yeah,
it wasn't just his play.
Say it's not that one play. But again, the reality of it is you're one bad decision away from being right where he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a little bit of a brotherhood involved in that. And they'll rally up around him. Now, again, what Sean Slocum, the special teams coach, needs to do, in my opinion, is he has to be the first guy to rally that kid up.
Yeah.
Because you know, the easy thing is to play the blame game, to start pointing fingers, to say it was him.
It's not going to change the result, is it?
I coached him. I don't know why he didn't do what I told him to do. All that nonsense. The bottom line is that you can decide for yourself whether you coached him well enough. Mm. The bottom line is he didn't perform. Now, what can you do to help the kid through it? Because this is going to be tough. He's going to live with that play the rest of his career.
This Stephen Bennett asked about, he's a Packers fan who's absolutely gutted. He said, if you're consistently shutting down an offense, why would you change tactics for third and long? That's crazy. We've covered that one off. Richard Law said, which performance was most impressive for you, Jeff? Seahawks comeback or the Patriots demolition of the Colts? Different ways of winning. I mean, I thought the more impressive game-long performance was the Patriots.
I think that's true in terms of game-long performance, but to me, the one that was most impressive in that it's so, you know, I mean, it's almost like you can't even fathom it.
No.
If you go from a coaching standpoint, 5 turnovers.
Yeah.
You're down 16-0 in the third quarter. Your quarterback is having a hard time completing the ball.
Yeah.
All the things, you throw an interception with 5 minutes left to go in the game, and all of the things that said this should never happen, and it happens for you. So that was one of the most unbelievable, wacky, crazy, come from behind you, this will never happen in a million years kind of games.
Certainly was. Made for great viewing and great drama on Sky Sports. Let's finish off Inside the Huddle with this question from Macaulay Bond, who says, do you think the Seattle Seahawks can do what they did to Peyton Manning? Can they do the same to Tom Brady and make this Super Bowl a non-contest?
You know what? I think that they have it in them, because certainly when they play, they're amazing. When it's going good for them, they are really nasty. And I think that they're in a different game, though, this time. I think they're in a game where very similar quarterbacks, not mobile guys, da-da-da-da-da. But I think the Patriots are more battle-tested than the Broncos were coming in. Mm. They've got guys who've been there, done that. They've got a better offensive line than the Broncos had last year, in my opinion. I think they've got better corners than the Broncos had last year. Their defense is probably, as a whole, functions better than the Broncos' defense last year. So I don't see that kind of blowout Super Bowl again. I think Seattle can win the game. I just don't think it's going to be a blowout.
All right, so that's the two games then, the championship games reviewed. That's your mailbag taken care of. Just a couple of bulletin board bits to fill you in on. All tickets for all games for Wembley Stadium in 2015 are now on sale, so you can buy your individual game tickets for all areas of the stadium. So you can go to nfluk.com for more details on that, or you can go direct to Ticketmaster, ticketmaster.co.uk/NFL. To buy your tickets. Just a note that from Monday of next week on Sky Sports 3, there'll be wall-to-wall NFL programming building up to Super Bowl 49. And Jeff, we're going to start podcasts next week, Monday through Saturday of Super Bowl week, taking people all the way into this big game. We'll look at everything that's going to break down between the Seahawks and the Patriots, and we'll also bring lots of color, hopefully, from Arizona.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great week out there in the desert, and certainly for us. You know how much fun it was last year when we got to those. You and I are up early and at those press conferences and really enjoying every bit of the football part of and all the other things that go on around it, but really and truly enjoy all the interaction that we get with the teams.
You get a good sense from the teams. You know, we don't see them on the practice field, but you do get a feel for how they're coping with the event, don't you, and how their mindset goes.
You know, and this is
going
to be, that's one of the intriguing things for me, is going to be to see how the teams handle the media. Mm. You know, you got Marshawn Lynch, who won't talk to the media. You got Michael Bennett, who's never met a radio or met a microphone he didn't like on one side. And then you got the Iron Curtain of the Patriots, where they won't say anything. I can't wait to hear Belichick. This is the greatest football team ever played against, and I think we're really going to have it.
It's that coach's press conference for me is going to be great. You know, Pete Carroll's going to be sitting there. Pete Carroll come out with the pom-poms, he'll look you in the eye, he'll answer every question. Belichick, and he'll have a suit on.
Yeah.
Belichick will come out, he might have a suit on, but he might very well have a cut-off hoodie over the top of it. And we'll just be grunting one-word answers.
And he can't wait. He's be looking at the sidelines trying to get on out of there. And Pete will be going, any other questions? Anybody else got a question? Come on, feel free, ask it.
But you know what's going to happen as well. We should have a little sort of score of this. You know when they ask a generic question to both coaches, how many times do you think Bill is going to let Pete go first? Do you want to take this? You want to take this one? You want to go first? And Pete, if he really wants to get into the head of the New England Patriots, say, no, you go first.
I tell you,
every time
we ought to take an over and under on the amount of times that Belichick answers a question in less than 5 seconds.
Yeah, then Pete has to go for like 5 minutes
to fill.
He's filling till the commercial break. All right, so we will speak to you all on Monday of next week as we start to build up to Super Bowl 49. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network, and we are a USP content production. Say goodbye, Jeff.
Aloha.